Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Welcome to the Side Action. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So, tell me about this Crested Butte trip. Lots of snow out there in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. We got hammered with snow. Arrived in Crested Butte Thursday morning, and it just started snowing then and really snowed all night into Friday, and we just got tons of powder, and I shredded pretty hard. Got myself a little ski workout in both Friday and Saturday. And Saturday it was nice. We got some sun. So that's always nice when you can sit around on the porches and drink beer on the mountain.
That's right.
Caught a couple of games too. We went down to the base to see the finish of LSU and Tennessee. And then later in the afternoon, I got to catch the Syracuse and Duke game. So I wasn't totally off the NCAA hoops grid.
How many guys went down there?
There's nine of us total.
Oh, that's a great trip.
So guys only, no women allowed, and we have a good time and catch up.
But you might have met some ladies out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we go out of town, have some fried chicken for dinner on Friday night at the famous Slogar in Crested Butte.
Okay.
And then we go out, hit the bar, talk in the town, play some pool. There's usually some townies in there that we hang out with.
So. No trips to the hot tub with the ladies late night?
No, not that I'm aware of. So.
That's maybe always that's always a goal of most of our guys' trips, but it never works. But so yeah, man. Well, my weekend was pretty low key. There was an Oscar party, and then it was pretty low, just small party. We was just watching, and that was kind of a surprise with the Green Book and all that.
Yeah. Any wagers for you on the Oscars?
I did not wager. We had a little pool going, no stakes pool, and actually Gallagher won. He actually picked Green Book because he liked it, and I was like, come on, give me a break. But it was fun. And then into the week, I went to the Bulls game on Monday, as you're aware. Bulls-Bucks. Got some great seats behind the bench. That was incredible, thanks to Walsh Construction. And I heard I was on TV, but, you know, whatever. The Bulls stink. But they were up like 38 to 23 at the quarter. And then they just, you know.
I think the Bulls ended up covering that game, at least.
I don't think they did.
Oh, no.
Because actually the number – it's funny you said that. It was 11 to start, but then Giannis did not play. It went down to 8.
Good point.
And then they did cover, or the Bucks covered. So it was an interesting game. There's a lot going on at Bulls games. It's not a lot on the court, but there's a lot of activity in the stands and stuff. So
nice.
And then a little conference action. A little. My voice might sound a little raspy out there, America, but that's what happens when you're out drinking all the time.
Networking and shaking hands.
That's right. Pressing the flesh. So. All right, well, let's review the episode a little bit. We have a little bit of a, well, it's not a legislative update. It's just a little talk about the Oscars. It's kind of off the grid a little bit. We'll go over our head-to-head segment and all of our picks there. Then you got a little AAF preview and recap from last week. Then we go into college hoops, which is the bulk of our show typically now, with all of our index and stuff like that. We'll go look at our look-ahead spots for this weekend. And then we'll talk a little MLS Cup preview. This is a little soccer preview. Action loves the soccer. And he's got some futures for us. Before we hit our final head-to-head segment and a little preview, we're going to pick an AAF game in there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to dominate you in the AAF picking department, but we shall see.
I'm sure you will. I've hit a little bit of a skid in my betting, so I'm sure you'll take advantage. So why don't you tell me a little bit about this Oscar situation with the best director?
Yeah, I hadn't really intended on betting on the Oscars, but as we were driving back from Crested Butte to Denver on Sunday, I was just scrolling through Twitter and I saw a post that the director of The Favorite, I don't know if you, I think you saw the film.
I did. It's actually pretty good. It's really good.
Yorgos Lanthimos, his odds started out as the best director award as 50-1.
Yeah.
And they kind of hovered around that for the time that they were up. Eventually getting to 40-1 as a Friday or Saturday morning, and then for some reason they just started crashing. And I read that a particular book in New Jersey took a bunch of brand new accounts that then went and bet the max bet on Yorgos to win Best Director.
Interesting. Okay.
So as soon as I saw that, I was thinking to myself, oh, I'm going to log in my accounts and check and see where he's at. Maybe there's something going on there, because mm-hmm. at that particular book, they took it off the board, which usually indicates that the bookmakers think that there's something fishy going on,
there's information out
and someone knows the outcome of an event.
Right.
It's really the only time that they would take something off the board, because then they can't take bets and make money.
Right.
So I logged in, and on sportsbook.ag, I saw that Yorgos was still 40-1.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, well, it's worth a $10 bet here. So sure. I put it in and was continued to look on Twitter and saw that the odds were crashing all the way down to 2-1 at some books.
I know. I heard that. That's just
leading
crazy.
Up to the Oscar show. So I boarded my plane thinking that I had a cool 400 in my pocket and landed in Chicago and saw that Sportsbook inexplicably had canceled the bet. Mm. Apparently, they thought it was that fishy that they just went and canceled every single bet on the Best Director. Mm. And then I landed in Chicago to find out, A, my bet was canceled. And then I looked and I saw that Yorgos had lost.
Yeah, so. Alfonso Cuarón. And he was the favorite, the real favorite. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what was going on there. It just was a strange steam move. I mean, you know, you figure there's only like two people that could possibly know the outcome anyway, right? The two accountant guys and whoever prints the thing. But I don't know. That's just a weird, bizarre situation.
As far as I understand, the Oscar picks and the way that they're, it's an accounting firm that does the tallying. And you're right. There's only one or two people who would actually know what that outcome is. So whoever had this information probably was wrong or was trying to pull a ruse. Maybe they were trying to do it so Cuarón's odds would drop, and then they actually came back over the top to make some more money on Cuarón.
Could be.
I don't know.
Could be. That's a lot of money to spend just to get a bet in.
Certainly. And very bizarre.
I do wonder, we didn't look it up, but I wonder what the Green Book odds were. They were definitely not the favorite. I mean, I think Star is Born was still up there, and Roma and everything.
I think Roma was the favorite in that category as well. Uh-huh. Black Panther was up there too, and Black Klansman. So.
Right. Yeah, did you hear that Spike Lee was walking out? He walked out. He was going to walk out when he found out Green Book won.
Really? No.
Yeah, he apparently, I guess the year that he lost with Do the Right Thing, Driving Miss Daisy won or something.
Right.
He kind of felt like it was a similar situation, and I guess cooler heads prevailed. They kept him in the building, but he seemed a little bit excited, but maybe a little bit inebriated when he was up there doing his speech. I've heard it, but it was interesting.
Well, it was the first time that books in the U.S. were taking bets on the Oscars out in New Jersey.
Right.
And I think some of the southern states had them as well. Still not on the board in Nevada, though the Gaming Commission doesn't allow Oscars bets.
That's so. Right. No entertainment bets, no, you know, interesting voting bets like that. So, all right, well, let's go into the head-to-head. We had a lot of big games this week and weekend. I guess we'll start off with the big one. We were pumping it up. We had North Carolina, Duke. Duke were 9.5-point favorites at home. This was an epic battle. You know, ESPN and everybody was pumping up this game beyond measure. Personally, my daughter was over. I was doing laundry. Game was about to tip off. I went downstairs to switch the laundry, you know, from the washer to dryer. Came back up, and I don't know, UNC was up like 6-2, and I'm like, where's Zion Williamson? Where is he? And then I'm like, then they started talking that he got hurt within 30 seconds. He blew out his shoe and he hurt his knee or something, and then he wasn't playing. I didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah, I missed it too. I was out to dinner with a couple of friends and it was on in the background, but I wasn't paying that close of attention. I saw around halftime that he was out. It was the first time I realized it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, North Carolina just ran out to a heavy lead.
Destroyed them.
And then just dominated the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Luke May took advantage of Zion's absence, finishing with 30 points and 15 rebounds for North Carolina. And RJ Barrett for Duke did pick up some slack and had 33 himself, but just wasn't enough for Duke in that game.
It was kind of strange. I don't know if it's just because they rely so much on Zion and they were kind of, you know, snake bit or something, but it was basically a layup line for Carolina. Mm-hmm. They scored, they only had 2 3-point, they were 2-for-20 from three, and the rest of them were all inside. I mean, they were scoring, I think they had like, was it 62 points in the paint or something? It was some inordinate amount of points in the paint. And like you said, May was scoring at will. Everybody was scoring at will. They were dunking, and it was just like, and that was in Cameron. I definitely underestimated North Carolina in general, but at the same time, Duke was not the same team without Zion. I didn't realize he was that much of a controlling middle player. I thought he was more of a wingish player, but whatever.
Very interesting, and really not something I'm going to put too much stock into, because obviously it was a huge aberration, and I'm sure the injury probably shocked the rest of the Duke team too.
It did, yeah.
Into what ended up being a heavy funk for the rest of the game. They're going to close the season in Chapel Hill, so mm-hmm. that's going to be very interesting to see what happens, and if Zion even comes back by then.
I know. There was all this talk about whether Zion should, you know, shut it down because he's going to be number one pick in the draft, and of course, the shoe gate, everybody's like looking at the shoe. You know, Obama was in the stand. You saw that, right?
Yeah.
And he was like pointing, look, his shoe, whatever. I mean, this is kind of crazy, but I understand that he actually doesn't change his shoes that often. That was another whole thing. Like Zion doesn't change his shoes every game or whatever people do. So anyway, well, you got the win. Congratulations. Final score was 88-72. We didn't say that. It was a beatdown.
We should add, remarkably stayed under, too, after all that offense. So
that's crazy. The other game we looked at, Utah, was 9.5-point underdogs on the road at Washington. I've been on Washington quite a bit. They've been one of the teams that actually covers. And early on in this game, Utah was game. They were definitely in this game. Washington wasn't scoring the ball, but as the game wore on, Washington just strangulated this team, and they ended up winning 62-45.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of the first half, missed most of the second, but I read that Washington held Utah to 5 second-half field goals.
Yes.
And they outscored Utah 29-18 in the second half and really just kind of busted the game wide open. Mm-hmm. They held Utah to 71.4 offensive efficiency, which is very abysmal.
Yes.
And the Washington point man, Matisse Thybulle, had a massive game with 10 amazing. Points, 7 rebounds, 6 steals, and 4 blocks.
Yeah, I watched this game and they kept kind of highlighting him because I understand he's only 6'3", 6'4", but he has like the 7-foot wingspan or something. Uh-huh. So he is just blocking every shot, and he makes a lot of steals, just a lot of deflection. So the whole team, I really liked watching them in detail on this game because I hadn't watched a lot of them play this year. And, man, they extend that zone. It is really not a zone. I mean, it's a matchup zone, right? But it really extends way beyond the three-point line. So it's fun to watch. They're going to be a tough team just from a format standpoint in the tournament.
No doubt. I can't wait to see what their matchups look like in the tournament because I think that this is a team that's set up to make a run, much like the Syracuse teams have over the past several years.
That's right. Speaking of Syracuse, look at this guy in the segues. Duke, we also had the Duke game again at Syracuse. Duke was 13-point favorites, according to us, at Syracuse. Obviously, that changed with Zion out. I think it went down to 6, 5?
4.5 started at, and I think it went up to about 5 right around tip.
Yeah. Exactly. So really in this game, Syracuse was running them in the first half. They were up by, I think it was 5 or 6 without Zion. But, you know, Coach K had made some adjustments in the lineup. He took out some guys and he put in Alex O'Connell. This guy was jacking shots. And in the second half, they actually took control and kind of won going away 75-65.
Yeah, Duke played well in the second half. But as I was watching this game, the one thing that I noted was just the poor, poor shooting by this Blue Devils team, especially on the perimeter. I saw time and time again how Syracuse just let Trey Jones shoot wide open.
Yeah.
He must have shot 3 or 4 wide open 3-pointers. Finished the game 2 for 12 and 1 of 7 from the 3-point line. So that's something that I'm going to be looking at moving forward is just how poor shooting this Duke team is from the outside. And with Zion out of the lineup, there's got to be some serious questions about them.
Oh, there's no question. That's the same thing that happened in the other game against Carolina. Jack White, is that his name?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That guy hasn't made a shot in like a month.
Uh-huh.
No, seriously. He's like 0 for his last like 25. It's something that they have to address. O'Connell actually came in and made it happen for them. But besides him and Barrett, it's tough, man. It's tough sledding. But luckily their defense picked up, and that's what got them over the top in the Syracuse game. But actually, you know, it's not on our head-to-head, but they lost again at Virginia Tech this week. So it's not like they're definitely mortal and vulnerable without Zion in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
The last game, we had Michigan State at Michigan. Michigan was a 2.5-point favorite, and understandably so. We had all those injuries for Michigan State. I told you I had a feeling about this one, action, and it came through. I just believe Izzo is one of the best coaches in college basketball, and now with the guys hurt, I think they're just going to listen, and they did. I mean, Winston's been playing at a great level. You got it 27 points and 8 assists, but they had other guys step up. This Tillman guy you put in there stepped up. Uh-huh. Goin stepped up. But defensively, this team played incredibly, and they won 77-70, but really I thought that they played Michigan even better than that score showed, because Michigan did make a run in that mid-second half.
Yeah, Michigan was up by six at one point early in the second half, and then Michigan State just turned it on.
Mm-hmm.
They snapped a 22-game winning streak for Michigan at home.
They did.
And I think the most impressive number that I pulled out of this game was the impressive offensive rating by Michigan State, 120 points per 100 possessions, which was incredible against the nation's number three rated Michigan defense.
That's right.
And on the other side of the ball, this Michigan offense continues to struggle.
Yeah.
2 for 14 from the 3-point line in the second half and 7 for 26 in the whole game. They're going to have a tough time winning in March if they continue to shoot like that.
If you watch the game, I watched this one, I knew you were traveling. Before those two shots that were hit by Jordan Poole late, it was like in the last minute, Neither team hit a three-point shot in the second half. It was pretty abysmal shooting, actually. It was all layups and free throws for the most part in that game. So,
yeah, and I'm going to continue to look to go under in a lot of these Michigan games. They continue to be an under team and right.
You've been saying that all season, so... All right, let's transition to your AAF, the Alliance of American Football. I guess they figured out that payroll situation. It was kind of a false story, so they ended up playing.
Yeah, week three happened.
It did.
Apparently.
So what do you got here for last week's games?
Well, the trend that I pointed out and as I was doing some reading is just how low these games have come in scoring.
Yep.
We talked about in the first week the new rules and how everyone across the football world thought mm-hmm. that there was going to be high-scoring games with a lack of defense and the rules that are catered to more offensive, high-scoring games.
Correct.
But it's been the exact opposite through 3 weeks. This weekend, all four games finished with the final score between 38 and 42. And now the unders are very hot, 10-2 through 3 weeks.
I know.
It's just something that I'm going to continue to look at. I've already peeked at some of the totals this week. And one that I picked out that I like a lot is the San Diego Fleet versus Memphis game on Saturday.
Okay.
Total is 41.5. I think it's trending down. I saw 41 before mm-hmm. we jumped on here. And Memphis has the quarterback.
He got benched though, right? He got benched. They put in like Zach Mettenberger.
Mettenberger, Hackenberg, whichever one. They can't throw the ball. And I'm going to go under in this game because Memphis is just terrible.
What I've heard on VSiN in kind of the analysis of this is that the quarterbacking is just really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the rules are conducive, they don't have the guys who can really distribute the ball like they can in the NFL or even in some of these college games to really run the score up. So besides the Orlando team, which we'll talk about later, a little preview in the head-to-head.
Yeah, nice.
You know, that's Spurrier kind of more being an inventive offense. It sounds like these games are pretty vanilla, and these guys can't really make it happen.
I agree. Offensive line play has been poor, too. Doesn't help offense either.
We wanted to touch – it's not AAF related. It's NFL related.
I saw you had a post about the combine posted this morning. Anything you'd like to touch on there, gambling edges?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of gambling edges. I just was talking about, you know, I do – posts on the Wegs pool about a variety of sports. I do a lot of content on the NFL draft. I've actually done a pool in the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. We could try to do that. I only get like five people to do it, but it's fun. But yeah, the main thing with the combine is, you know, they were talking about Kyler Murray and his height and weight. I'm sure there was probably some gambling action on that.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure that there's going to be guys, you know, they're going to be betting on the 40 times and stuff like that. For me, you know, I like to just watch the combine personally because I get to know the players. This is the first step. Obviously, there was the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game. I didn't get to see that much of that this year, but you know, you really get to see these guys, and obviously, it's just measurables at this point. But you start kind of seeing who's going to differentiate themselves from the pack, and really, I like to see the guys from the smaller programs who kind of step up into the first, second, and third rounds. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to take any of this information that you learn from watching the combine and correlate that into your index for next season?
Probably not that much, but I will tell you, fantasy-wise, it does factor in.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that before. I mean, you know, like last year, I mean, obviously Saquon Barkley dominated the combine. He obviously was an incredible fantasy player, but I guess it could factor in. The quarterbacking, this is a unique year because besides Murray, I don't even know if he's going to be a top 10 player. The quarterbacking is really bad this year. It's unlike the last 3-4 years where you've had, you know, maybe not even top line guys, but they're going to be drafted top line. This is really a defensive line draft, and there's tons of guys in the defensive line that will go early and often. So it may be a betting on first quarterback taken, you know, like an over under in like the, you know, 8th pick or something like that. That would be something to look at.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to be interested in some of the draft props. Mm-hmm. So going forward in the next few weeks after March Madness, probably it's something we can look into April. And discuss here.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's jump into college hoops. This is the bread and butter. You mentioned Zion and his shoe heard around the world. Hopefully he got a new, I think it was a Paul George brand.
Did you see the Nike stock took a hit the next day?
It did. It went down like 3% or something. That's crazy. Well, we put here that Nova drops 4 of the last 5, but last night I bet against them and you came out on top. Marquette was actually, Villanova was favored by what? Five.
It closed. Yeah. Five and a half.
Five or 5.5. And Marquette's been red hot and they've played well. Nova's been sucking and. Of course, that makes sense. Nova won.
Yeah, Marquette was leading the whole game and covering. I think they were up 60-55 at one point with a couple of minutes left.
They were.
And Villanova flipped that and won the game 67-61 for the cover. Just an incredible turnaround. And I think you and I were texting last night. They were just chucking threes
chucking.
Left and right. And so was Marcus Howard, for that matter. Yeah. But just got me thinking as I see Villanova shoot three after three after three that came up short. If they play like that in the next couple of weeks, they're not going to go very far.
No, they're not going to go very far. It's a different team. Phil Booth is a solid player. Pascal's pretty good. They actually won the game at the free throw line. That's kind of what happened. But I like this team. You can see it in the metrics. I mean, defensively, they don't play like they did last year. And obviously, they're not hitting the threes at the same clip. So, I mean, really, Lenardi and Palm don't have them very high. They're like a 7 seed or something.
Sure.
But they could definitely be an upset, even a first-round upset.
How about Tennessee? Pretty rough week for those guys. We touched on the LSU game.
That's right.
Right off the bat, a tough loss in overtime there to the Tigers where they just got dominated inside. Naz Reid, the big guy for LSU, was just a rebounding machine. And even without Tremont Waters, a big win for the Tigers.
It was a huge win for the Tigers. But I'll tell you, I watched the game and the opening sequence with Grant Williams and Naz Reid. Did you see that play? There was kind of like a tie-up where Williams kind of had his arms up and he kind of grabbed him a little bit. And then Naz Reid ended up throwing him to the ground.
Wow.
And they gave Naz just a flagrant 1. I actually thought he should have been thrown out. But he ended up staying in the game and he's such a difference maker. That dude is clearly going to be an NBA player. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's like 7 foot tall, but he's long and strong. I mean, the guy was like incredible. But Tennessee's struggling. It looks like they definitely struggle against bigger lineups.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, Grant Williams is a wide load, but he's certainly not going to play well against taller players.
Exactly. They're undersized. Let's go quickly over some of these metrics and things that we look at. For me, the KenPom versus the AP review. Here's some of the overrated teams per the AP and KenPom. So Kansas State, you know, we've talked about them. They're a solid squad, but that offense really brings them down. They're 28th in KenPom, but they're 16th in the AP, which is kind of weird. Washington, even though we've talked about how good their defense is, they've cracked the top 25, but they're 36th in KenPom because that offense isn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa, they've showed their true colors. They're 22nd in the AP, but they're 32nd in KenPom. And as you know, Fran McCaffrey got suspended 2 games because he followed some referee into the tunnel screaming expletives at him.
Fran is crazy, man.
I heard his wife got kicked out of a game last year.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
It's insane. The last team is Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a tough, rugged team. They're 23rd in AP, but they're 30th in KenPom because they, too, can't score. So you're kind of seeing a little bit of a theme, one side or the other. The underrated teams, Iowa State. Man, this team kind of baffles me, though. They're 13th in KenPom, but 28th in the AP. This team plays great some games, and then they just don't disappear. I don't know what the deal is. And then Auburn, I've told you, don't bet on this team.
Agreed.
KenPom, they're 16th because of that great shooting. But they're 30th in the AP. But Mississippi State is coming around. They're 20th in KenPom and 29th in the AP. And this team's actually playing really good. They're actually starting to get some wins. And then Louisville, this is obviously before another devastating loss. But they're 23rd in KenPom and 26th in the AP. I would fade Louisville going forward.
Agreed. I think Louisville is on the decline ever since that collapse versus Duke. They've been trending downwards.
Some of the ATS stuff that I'm looking trend-wise, I'll skip Nevada because I think I put that down wrong. But Kentucky's 5-1 on the road. They're 10-4 overall in their last 14, but they're 5-1 on the road. North Carolina 6-0 on the road.
This is against the spread?
Against the spread, yeah. Wow. And 10-4 against the spread. So I like those guys on the road, and that's one of my spots this week. Kansas State is 6-2 on the road as well. And then Washington's 5-0 at home. Those are the other ones I'll cover. What about the action index? How does that compare?
Well, a little bit of a shakeup at the top. Duke's okay. still at number one, really? But Gonzaga, the true number one in the AP poll, has jumped a couple of spots, mm-hmm. and they're in at number two. North Carolina, after the big performance and big week, they had another win over Florida State on the weekend.
Killed them by 18.
They're up into third place. Virginia Cavaliers are in fourth after a couple of lackluster performances, I'll call it. Mm-hmm. Michigan State's five, Kentucky's yep. six, Tennessee is seven, followed by Texas Tech and two Big Ten teams, Michigan and Purdue, rounding out the top 10.
Yeah, Texas Tech got that big win against Kansas over the weekend. They actually crushed them. We were on that one.
Like 40 plus.
That was just a domination. And if Texas Tech can score, they're going to be rising in all in indices.
That offense has been ticking up lately. Those mm-hmm. couple of guards have been shooting the ball a lot better than they were earlier in the season, which changes their metrics.
Yeah, I got them in KenPom up to 47th. As we talked about even like 2-3 weeks ago, they were around 100. I like your Boilers still hanging out at 10, even though they had some slip-ups against the spread, too, and got a loss. So you have a little bit in the mid-majors, though. I like that.
Yeah, I was just kind of eyeballing some of the mid-majors and thought we could talk over which ones of these teams we think could do damage in March. Mm-hmm. I've got Buffalo up to number 12, followed by Houston. Calvin Sampson and that team have been playing extremely well. And Nevada at 20, and Wofford, I was surprised to see all the way up at number 22.
Now, Wofford's in the top 25 in the AP now, so congratulations, Terriers, you guys did it. But I got them, they're 25 in KenPom, so they're right about where you're at. I love this Wofford team. I've been talking about them. They're going to make the tournament whether they win their tournament or not in the SoCon, so mm-hmm. watch out. Buffalo, you know, I don't know about that team. I think their metrics are really good, but from an ATS standpoint, they're not covering very well. I don't know. It's one of those things. Maybe they're just waiting to get to the tournament, and mm-hmm. they should also make the tournament if they don't win their conference tournament. But of this group, you know, I was dogging early in the season, but Houston is legit. I mean, I know that they're a top 10 team now in the AP, right? Is that right? I think I got them at, I guess they're eighth in the AP. But, you know, they're 14th in KenPom, and this team is 12th on defense, but they're up to 30th on offense. So this team can really make a difference in the tournament. One you didn't list, we've already been discussing, and we'll little preview of some of the spots is Utah State. Mm. They got a big matchup this week against Nevada. Nevada hasn't played quite at the same level that they did early in the season. And Utah State is in the top 40 in KenPom. I've got them at 39. So there's a lot of teams to watch, especially for those upsets from the mid-majors.
Yeah, I think out of this group, my team to pick is going to be Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I know you talked, they're not covering spreads, but that's due to the large spreads that they're getting laid out every week. They're consistently laying 14, 15 points, even on the road. And it's hard to win against a spread like that, where when we turn to March, they're likely going to be underdogs every mm-hmm. night. So,
although I will say that in the last bracketology, I believe Buffalo's a 5 seed.
Wow.
Yeah, so the first round they won't be. Houston.
Wow, there's been a few 12 seeds that have been favored, though, the last couple
really?
Of years.
So okay,
there's a good chance they might still be underdogs.
Yeah, Wofford's up to an 8, so they won't be the seed upset. Mm-hmm. But usually, definitely with Houston, will be a higher seed. They're going to be a 3 or 4.
Yeah,
no, so I like Buffalo, too.
Little tip there for Weg's pool players. You do get those upset points, even though the spread might be flipped the opposite direction.
That's right. Plus two for that lower seed, so. All right, so which spots? Well, first of all, you wanted to say the conference tournaments are beginning on Monday, right?
Yeah. My second favorite part of the season are the conference tournaments. Mm-hmm. Even. And it might actually be better than some of the NCAA tournament weekends because you just have a consistent flow of games that are just going every hour. And one angle that I really like to look at during these conference tournaments is unders because mm-hmm. you get these teams that have played a long grinder season and then they have to go, a lot of them, to a neutral court venue mm-hmm. where they're not used to shooting. There's a lot of different sight lines. The game times are odd for them. And then on top of that, the stakes are much higher. So it's one tip that I'd like to throw out to the listeners there, especially looking at first halves mm-hmm. in the early games in some of these conference tournaments. There's a lot of unders that come in.
Yeah, I can see that. I really like the conference tournaments, too, because this is really the March Madness for those smaller conferences. I mean, this is their chance. Just getting to the dance is their championship. Mm-hmm. And there are some epic games sometimes. I mean, I remember seeing, you know, Vermont against, you know, UMBC or something like that, that just go to the wire, go to overtime, whatever, big shots. And a lot of these venues are much smaller. So these fans are just going crazy and it's just loud. So it's definitely something that I like to watch. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of discussion in kind of the college basketball world whether there should be these conference tournaments because, you know, you got a team that's basically rolled through the conference regular season, and then they lose in the tournament and don't go to the big dance. For now, we like watching them.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best parts of the March season as well.
Exactly. So. All right, so which spots are your eye on this week in college basketball?
Well, didn't see anything on Friday night.
No Friday night action?
Bummer.
Dang.
But I like an early morning Saturday tilt where Michigan State goes on the road with revenge on their minds at Indiana. I've got Indiana listed as a 9.5-point underdog, but the angle I'm going to be looking at here is the total. Looks like 136 according to KenPom, and I'm going to be looking to play it under in the first half. It's a noon Eastern tip-off, and we've been talking about that slow starts for those games in the early window. And anything that comes out around 65, expecting it right in that range, 64, 65, I'm probably going to go under. Both of these teams play extremely good defense, 9th and 26th, respectively, in defensive efficiency. And on top of that, this Indiana offense has been struggling as of late. Yep. They're just not scoring the ball. Romeo Langford has still been in a funk. And really, Juwan Morgan hasn't been up to his standards this year either. So I'm looking at a slow pace and lots of defense for a first half under.
Okay, I like that. That's been your angle throughout. I have not followed that. I should do that because my picks are terrible. But Indiana did get a big win last night?
Yeah, Tuesday night against Wisconsin.
That was a big win, and they're still somehow on the edge of the bubble. I don't know how that's possible, but...
Yeah, 15 losses right now, but still a chance to make the tournament. Just shows you how soft the bubble is this year.
Super soft, but yeah, I like that angle. The next one we've got is Kentucky at Tennessee. Actually, no, we're going to save that for the head-to-head. That's right. Sorry about that. As well as, no, Utah, we're both on this one. So Nevada at Utah is our next game.
Utah State,
I'm sorry.
The Aggies.
And we're actually showing it. Utah State is a 2-point favorite at home, total at 143. You know, we both agree on this one. We both like the Aggies in this one. I just mentioned them as a kind of a mid-major surpriser. They're probably going to be one of those teams, if they make it in, they're going to be a 12 or 13. Maybe you have to do the play-in game. And the last time these two teams, man, Nevada dusted this team in early January, so I think that there's a revenge spot for Utah State. Plus, they're just playing really good basketball. I've got them right now. Utah State is, you know, I mean, they're not fantastic, but they're 43rd on offensive efficiency and 38th in defensive efficiency, and those are solid numbers for a team like this. And you know, Nevada, they sometimes struggle, as you've talked many times, that they live by the three a little bit. If they're not hitting that three, they have trouble scoring, so I definitely like Utah in this spot.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite spots of the week. And in fact, I know my numbers show that Utah State should be a short favorite here, but I expect there's a decent chance that they'll open up as an underdog.
And I agree.
If that's the case, I'll be playing them on the money line and definitely jumping all over the Aggies. You mentioned it already. They have a pretty solid defense, but I think the area where they really stand out is their 2-point percentage defense.
Okay.
They're number 3 in the nation. And Nevada obviously is a team that likes to get inside. They score a lot of their points from inside the arc. So I think that the Aggies will set up nicely to defend that. And then on top of that, they're a fantastic rebounding team, second ranked in defensive rebounding, which I think will go a long way in helping them get revenge against Nevada on Saturday.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's hope. The next game we've got is also on Saturday, Penn State at Wisconsin. Penn State, you're listing as 8-point underdogs on the road, total at 126, nice low total. What do you got in this one?
Well, I really like Penn State in this game. They have been playing extremely well lately. Just beat Maryland, and before that, they went on the road to Illinois and got another big win for this team.
Yep.
And as you mentioned, they are dangerous right now.
They are.
These guys are rolling. And Wisconsin is a good team, but they're methodical. An 8-point spread is hard for a team that plays like Wisconsin to cover. And it's just too many points, in my opinion. There's a low total, and Penn State plays great defense, too. Penn State is ranked 36th in defensive efficiency, no slouch. And I think that they're going to be able to hold this Wisconsin offense down a little bit and get within that number.
I agree with you. I understand that Penn State has a big man. So, you know, you've got Ethan Happ is the kind of difference maker for Wisconsin. So I think they're going to be able to check him a little bit. But more importantly, this team just seems to be getting its stride. And they're playing much better. They don't care if they play on the road or at home. And Wisconsin, as good as they've been all season, and they're really good. I mean, they're in the top 12 in KenPom. I think that 8 points is a big number. So I agree with you, especially when you see a total of 126. You got to imagine like an 8-point differential is almost like a blowout. So I'm on you with that one.
Yeah, certainly too many points for that low of a total.
The next one is the Hurricanes of Miami are going to Duke. Duke are 22-point favorites right now. That's how we're listing it on Saturday. But you're targeting the under of 151 in this one. And what's the thinking?
Well, I've been following this Duke team all season long, and I think I've touched on it on a few shows past. But the public perception of them is that they're this high-flying offense. They're prolific with R.J. Barrett and Zion when he's in the lineup. And the totals in their games have just been super inflated. Looking at KenPom, he's got this one projected as 151. But when you go into the record and dive into Duke's games this year, they're 18-8 to the under.
Yeah.
Which just shows you that you're paying a premium value, a high total, whenever you're betting on these Duke games. And they're 7-3 in the last 10 games. And on top of that, this Miami-Florida offense has been poor lately as well. And I think that this game is going to go way under 151. If it opens near there, I'm going to be jumping all over it.
Okay. And that may just be also a factor without Zion in there. I mean, it may just be trailing, right? So it's just something that isn't trending properly. And it's because the public perception isn't following it. So I agree with you. The next game I've got, these are all Saturday games, it seems like. It's the Carolinas playing at Clemson. We're projecting Carolina to be 7-point favorites on the road. The total of 147. The bottom line is I've been getting crushed on the sides as we've been texting quite a bit. I need to pick a side here once in a while. And this is one of the only teams I trust in North Carolina. I listed before that this team has won six straight against the spread on the road. Clemson's actually really good at home. They're 5-2 against the spread at home. But this Heels team is playing incredible basketball. And they seem to have found the right formula with their team, mixing in, you know, really just pounding the ball down low, but also hitting some threes when they need it. Now, both teams have really good defense, but I do like that 7 points, and I will lay that against Clemson.
I think you're onto something here. North Carolina has had a heck of a week, as we touched on earlier, and the freshman, Kobe White, is really coming into his own and running this team, and they like to get up and down, fifth ranked in tempo. It's going to be quite the contrast in styles because Clemson likes to play a slower pace. And whichever team controls the pace in this game is probably going to have the advantage. And I think it's probably going to be North Carolina. Add to that, their rebounding prowess is just
incredible.
An incredible advantage in every game that they play. So I'll be interested in watching it. Probably stay away. I might look at the total in this game just because I think that it may be a touch slower pace than North Carolina usually likes to play.
Okay. I gotcha. I've also got another game that I like, NC State at Florida State. Florida State we're projecting as a 6-point favorite at home, the total being 150. You know, the Noles were red hot. They had won like 9 straight games, and then they went to North Carolina and kind of got crushed. But but this Wolfpack team is not the same. This team started off really hot, was hitting a bunch of threes, but it seems like at this point they just are kind of flailing. And I just like Florida State to basically big boy this North Carolina State team at home and win easily. So that's 6 points. I will definitely lay those 6 points at home. But it looks like you might also like the under in this game.
Yeah, another spot where I think the number is just going to be way too high. It's posted up at 150. Mm-hmm. And both of these teams are looking to play fast, of course. NC State is one of the faster teams in the country. Mm-hmm. But Florida State, their offense has cooled off a little bit, as you mentioned. And I think that 150 points is just way too many for this game, and I think it's going to stay under that number.
All right. The last game we'll touch on in this segment is Michigan at Maryland. We'll talk about the head-to-head, you know, the side later, but you actually like the under, and you see the total at 130 again. Why do you like the under? This game's on Sunday.
Yeah, this one's probably my favorite play that I put on the list, and obviously this has been a trend of the show tonight, but I like this one to stay under, too. 130 points. Mm. Maryland plays fantastic defense.
They do.
They're going to be at home in this one, and going against that Michigan offense, which has been playing poorer and poorer as of late, I expect this game to be really slow and a defensive battle. They both play a slow pace in the 60s possessions per game, and they're both in the top 20 in defense. So I'm going to be playing this game under and also looking for a first half under too, even though it's a late afternoon game on Sunday.
Okay. I did watch Michigan State. One of the things that they noted in there, besides Teske, they don't have a lot of size. And I know Iggy is the man. He's very, you know, he's very crafty. He's a really good ball player, but you know, we got Bruno over here.
Bruno.
And this dude shuts down the middle. So if Michigan isn't hitting the ball from the outside, which one of the things I didn't mention in that game earlier was that what's his name, the point guard,
Xavier Simpson.
Oh man, he's bad. Just leave that guy open. He can't hit the broadside of a barn. So the bottom line is, if Michigan isn't hitting threes, they're not going to score enough. So I like that under too. That makes sense.
Yeah, when you have a point guard on the floor who draws no defensive attention, it's hard to run real offense. And I think that is a part of why their offense has been so poor lately.
No question. Okay, well, let's transition into Action's favorite sport. We got soccer. Let's do a little preview of the MLS.
Yeah, I'm excited that MLS is coming back. It kind of snuck up on me, to be honest with you. It was a fairly profitable sport for me last summer. So I'm looking forward to the new season kicking off. And we have a new team joining the league this year, Wags. I don't know if you heard, but SC Cincinnati
is
joining the Natty Eastern Conference. So there's now a league record 24 teams in the league.
That's good.
Which I think may be a little hard to sustain, but we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the regular season kicks off this Saturday and ends on November 10 with the MLS Cup. Mm-hmm. So quite the long season. They're also debuting a new postseason format this year.
Okay.
As the top seven teams from each conference qualify for the playoffs. And then the top team gets a bye into the next round, and then they'll play a single elimination on from there. So
okay.
A little bit of a change, as in years past, there was a home and home when you got to the conference finals. That's been eliminated. Now it's just single elimination, kind of similar to the other American sports.
Okay, interesting. Adapting it a little bit to the American version.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, it looks like here when we look at the futures that – you know, the teams that were kind of in it last year were at the top, which makes sense. You got the Bulls, the Red Bulls, New York Red Bulls. They currently are plus 500 to win. They were plus 600 to start. And Atlanta, those are the champs, plus 600 and plus 500 to open. But then the Galaxy, that was the team who played Atlanta, right?
It was Portland.
Portland.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Portland was in the final.
We got LA Galaxy at plus 600. They open at plus 800. And then they have another club in New York, not just the Red Bulls, huh?
Yeah, two New York teams and two LA teams here in the MLS.
And those are all at the top. I mean, the New York City Football Club is plus 900, and then the LA Football Club is plus 1,000. You've highlighted the Sounders, though.
Yeah, I think that out of this group, obviously there are some good clubs here at the top. Atlanta, the defending champs, are a team definitely worth a look. But they sold off one of their best midfielders, Miguel Almiron, to Europe. And they still have the high-flying and scoring Joseph Martinez. But I think that there's not much value in betting them at the 600 odds. The team I am looking at, though, is Seattle. American scorer forward Jordan Morris was injured for the most part of last year, and this team still played decently well and battled for the playoffs, but he's returning fully healthy this year, and I'm expecting him to go on a tear. So I'm gonna be putting down a little bit of money on Seattle, as well as a couple of Eastern Conference teams that I may dabble as well. Toronto FC with Jozy Altidore leading the charge. They did sell off one of their other players who was key in their attack, Sebastian Giovinco, the Italian. But I still think Toronto has a solid squad, and at 14-1, a little bit of value.
Yeah.
And another solid team, which is always there, is Sporting KC. This Kansas City team is just solid. They've got midfielders and attackers that are all very veteran in the league. And at 14-1, I think there's some value with them as well.
No value with the Chicago Fire.
The Chicago Fire have a couple of decent players. The German, Schweinsteiger, is in there. And then they have a very talented scoring forward by the name of Nikolic.
Okay.
But they're down at 50-1 here, and I just don't see them battling for a playoff spot, so not worth any of my money.
Now, for the MLS games, are they typically higher scoring than you would have in some of the European leagues?
That's a great question. You're spot on. Yeah, a lot of these games are quite a bit higher scoring, and you'll notice that in the totals as well. Mm. You oftentimes see totals that are 3, 3.5, even 2.75 in some games, whereas in Europe, there's a lot more 2, 2.5s.
And why is that? Is it just because they're not playing as much defense, or is there any kind of rule changes or something?
No rules. I think that it does have to do with the caliber of the defenders that play here in the MLS. It's a little bit more of an attacking league, and the high ranking defenders in the world are going to ply their trade over in Europe as opposed to coming over here to play in the MLS. You see a lot of the older attackers mm-hmm. that are generally well known in Europe kind of finish their careers here in the MLS.
Right.
I've not so much that. For defenders.
I gotcha. Makes sense. Okay. Any other comments for the MLS going forward?
I haven't looked at opening weekend odds, but I certainly am probably going to be getting some wagers in this weekend. So if I pick any out, I may send them out on Twitter.
All right. Check the Twitter sphere, guys. He's got some picks. All right, let's do our head-to-heads this week. We've got three basketball games, college basketball, and one AAF game. So let's start off with the big rematch. Kentucky is at Tennessee. This is on Saturday. We are speculating that Tennessee will be a two-point favorite at home. I will go first. I am going to go with the Vols. I don't love this team, actually. I'll put that out there. Seeing them play a couple of games, both versus LSU and Kentucky, I can see that they can be big-boyed by bigger lineups. However, Tennessee has to win this game. It's just kind of a revenge spot, and I think that the short 2 points is definitely in my favor. They don't have to cover a big number here. I do think Kentucky is the class of the SEC, but I can see them dropping this game, rolling into the SEC tournament very soon.
Yeah, I just can't get out of my head, even though I do know that Reed Travis has been injured.
That's right.
We talked earlier, we're not sure about his availability for this weekend's game, but I keep remembering back to how much PJ Washington just dominated the Volunteers in the first game. So I'm expecting a little bit more of the same there. And Kentucky had kind of been looking ahead a little bit in this game.
They did.
I don't know if you saw them on Tuesday night. They almost dropped one to Arkansas.
I know. Arkansas stinks.
And Arkansas is terrible. So hopefully that's a sign of good things to come, that they were preparing for the Volunteers already. Mm. But this Kentucky team plays great defense, eighth ranked in defense. Obviously, Tennessee has a stellar offense, but mm-hmm. I expect them to hold it down a little bit and continue to dominate the Volunteers inside like they did in the first game.
Yeah, that's the formula. Okay, well, let's go over the AAF game. Why not? This is also a Saturday tilt, right?
Saturday afternoon, I believe, yeah.
We've got Orlando, the Apollos. We're saying that they're going to lay 4.5 points at Salt Lake City. And what's Salt Lake's?
The Stallions.
The Stallions, of course, the Stallions. So what do you like in this one, Action?
Well, I like Salt Lake City.
Okay. Lovely
and,
town.
The only player that I know on this team is Matt Asiata.
Oh, yeah,
the
sure.
former Vikings running back, touchdown vulture.
That's right.
He used to be on my dynasty football team, so oh. I have a soft spot in my heart for him. But the real reason is just because Orlando has had a pretty tough travel schedule mm-hmm. lately. They've played the last two games on the road, and now they're going to have to go cross-country to the high altitude in Salt Lake. And with a lot of these totals opening up so low, I think that there's some value here in getting the Salt Lake Stallions over the field goal. The key numbers are quite a bit different in the AAF because, as we talked about, they have to go for two every time. And 4.5, 5, not really much of a difference. So I'll take the 4.5 with Salt Lake.
All right. Well, obviously, I'm behind the running Apollos of Steve Spurrier. And, I mean, he's actually got a decent quarterback. I've never heard of this guy, Garrett Gilbert, but he is the leading passer right now in the AAF. Mm-hmm. And Charles Johnson is the leading receiver. So they've got something working. These guys have put up some big points. Last week was a bit of a step down for them in points, but they've scored over 20 points a game easily. They had 42 in the first and 37 in the second. So you figure they're going to put up at least 24 to 25 points. I don't know if Salt Lake's defense is any good, but I know that Spurrier is probably the most inventive coach in this league. So 4.5 points, it's hard for me to say if that's a lot. In the NFL, that's a lot. But as you said, they got to go for two all the time. So I'm willing to lay those points and see if Spurrier and Gilbert and the crew can make this happen.
All right. Should be fun. Hopefully we can get it on TV this week.
That's right. Exactly. The next game is going to go back to college basketball. We've got the Zags. Gonzaga's going to St. Mary's. This should be a Saturday night game. We're speculating that St. Mary's is going to be a 12-point underdog at home. The Zags have been rolling, but why do you like the Zags in this one?
Well, this Gonzaga team has just been kicking ass and taking names. They're winning their conference games by 30 points per game, mm-hmm. and they're just playing outstanding basketball right now. I think that they destroyed St. Mary's in the first game, and I expect that they'll be looking to lock up the conference crown this weekend and take down St. Mary's again on the road. I was listening on the radio where a couple of books suggested that Gonzaga should be 20 plus favorites in every game. So yeah, this number looks a little light to me, and we'll see how it opens. But I like Gonzaga.
I mean, I love Gonzaga. I think they're going to be in the Final Four. I got to go back to our initial episode for college basketball. I think I had them in the Final Four. I love this team, but they haven't been covering on the road as much as I'd like. I've actually lost a couple of picks with these guys. They're 3-2 against the spread on the road in their last five. St. Mary's is the team that's right on the bubble. This is a game that they have to win. In reality, in a betting standpoint, I probably would be looking at the first half, first half spread.
I like that angle.
Because if it's probably 6 or 7, I like St. Mary's. Oftentimes in these games, as we talked about, these underdog teams play really great in the first half, like San Francisco did early in the season at home. But I will definitely take those 12 points. We were actually surprised. We thought maybe this would be like a 14, 15 point or 17 point game. Mm-hmm. But when we looked at KenPom, he had it at like 8 points,
he
right?
He did, yeah.
So we're kind of splitting the baby here and going between in 12 points. So I will take the 12. Hopefully St. Mary's can play a little bit of defense. They are not very good on defense. They are, I've got them at 82nd, but they are really good offensively at 18th. So hopefully they can run and gun and keep up with those Zags.
I wonder if KenPom would want to bet us. We can take the Zags -8.
Exactly. Let's do it. All right, the last game will be a Sunday game. This is Michigan at Maryland. We mentioned the total already. We are speculating that Maryland will be a 1-point underdog at home to Michigan. I like Maryland in this spot. I love Bruno Fernando and the crew. This team had a major setback this week at Penn State, but they're a different team at home. Michigan, as we've talked about, struggles to score the ball. And as much as they are a really good defensive team, Maryland is right there with them. And I like Maryland at home. They're 23rd defensively, and I love Bruno.
Bruno. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at these numbers, and Maryland is certainly going to have an edge on the glass against Michigan. They can out-rebound them. Michigan is very poor in the offensive rebounding metrics, but where they do have an advantage is on defense. Mm-hmm. And this Michigan team is likely going to lock down some of the Maryland shooters. I do expect that Bruno will probably get his on the inside, but if they can hold the shooting guards for Maryland down and keep them off the three-point line, I think that Michigan has a chance in this game. They're going to have some motivation here too, coming off the tough loss last weekend at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. They're now a game back from Purdue and Michigan in the loss column, and they're going to need this one to keep pace and have a chance at that Big Ten crown and the number one or two seed in the Big Ten tournament. So I think Michigan's going to be extra motivated going into this one, and I have a feeling they're going to pull off the road upset.
All right. I like that. Well, we'll see what happens. These are always coin flip games, as I've been showing. The metrics aren't working for me, so we'll see what happens. All right. Well, I wanted to make a few announcements. We talked last episode that we're going to have some live events, and we've basically moved forward on that. So our first live event we are going to be doing on Thursday, March 14th. We're going to do it at Green Street Local. That's a local spot for action here in the West Loop. And that's going to be at 5 p.m. That's going to be basically between the games. The games actually start on Wednesday, but there's a morning session and an evening session. The second session will start at 6 p.m., so we're trying to get the live spot at 5 p.m. at Green Street Local. So please come out and share the time with us. We're going to see if we can work up some mics and see what we can do to make this happen and give you some spots to bet on both the Big Ten tournament and other conference tournaments during that section.
Yeah, I mean, I am attending the Big Ten tournament, so the time may be bit flexible depending if Purdue is rounding out a victory there at the end of the first session, but we're certainly trying to get over to Green Street and see if we can talk some Big Ten basketball there with the locals.
Exactly. So we will send out more information on Twitter, on the Twitter and I guess the Instagram account, but let me just pull that up right now. The address of the place, just so you know, is 130 South Green Street. So we'll put that out on Twitter just for everybody too.
Cool bar, tons of great beer on tap, and they have a huge big screen TV with a projector. So I'm sure there'll be a projection screen, though. I'm sure they'll be showing some of the Big Ten games there as well if you're interested in watching, as well as the other conference tournaments that'll be going on.
Yeah, there should be, all of them should be underway at that point, especially the big ones. So that'll be exciting. Our second live event will be the opening day of the tournament, the real first round, not the first four. That'll be Thursday the 21st. We're going to do that at the Four Shadows Bar, which is our, you know, it's basically my home away from home sometimes. It's right by my buddy Milos's place. And that's at 2758 North Ashland Avenue in Lakeview. We'll be out there at 10 in the morning. Rob and the gang who own the bar are going to have us out there, and they're going to have us set up. We're going to hopefully work out a mic system so we can get out there. But join us out there early. We're going to have some, you know, get some food going and check out those opening games. I personally love those opening tips. And even though there's a couple games playing, but watching those early games, we're going to be there most of the day, watching all games all day. So we're taking off work. So come by. If you can't make it for the 10 a.m., we're going to be there all day and just join us watching the games and having fun at the Four Shadows.
Yeah, and betting first half unders.
This guy loves the unders, man. So just to repeat, we will be the Big Ten Championship tournament. We will be at Green Street Local on the 14th of March on Thursday, and the very next week on the 21st, we'll be at the Four Shadows. We said, you know, roughly 5 o'clock for the Big Ten, and then 10 a.m. on for the real NCAA tournament.
Yeah, can't wait. This is like the high holidays for me. The tournaments are coming fast and furious, and there's so much work to be done.
Exactly. You know, I've already done a lot of pre-work, but I'm excited. Tomorrow you will see the Wegg's Pool distribution email will happen tomorrow. You know, pool startup and obviously the conference tournament. So it's time to start doing your research, guys. If you haven't been listening to us, go back to previous episodes and hopefully you can listen the next couple weeks and get some more insights. All right. Well, we'll join us next week as a regular episode on Thursday, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll start having the live events and subsequent events. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me personally at Wegg's Pool on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
All right. Good luck this weekend.
Good luck, everybody, and good night. That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.